Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 52 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games, all that kind of good stuff. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, where the Colts
have righted the ship.
They have.
They're 2-1. 2-1 as we record.
The game against Denver looked pretty good. I think that the score was higher than they actually played.
Yeah.
But you know.
We were in no danger at any point.
That's right.
I felt fine. And the Cincinnati Reds clinched the National League Central Division last night.
Woo! It's a miracle. I'm just saying, after last year
after the last 15 years. Yeah.
So, no, this is exciting times for Colts football and for the Reds.
But even more importantly, it's an exciting time for games.
As always, that was the nicest segue you've ever
done. Thank you.
Yeah. Always a good time for games here in the gaming capital, and we've got lots of good stuff to talk to you about this episode. What are we going to be talking about, Cody?
Well, we're going to be talking about a lot of things, including a nice return on investment. We're going to be talking about not only getting games, but getting games to the table multiple times and really getting your money's worth for your games.
That's right, yeah. It's kind of a problem, especially for podcasters like us, getting things to the table multiple times. Mm-hmm. And we'll go over some strategies of how to do that and what your criteria might be for that. So we've also got some emails and voicemails. Do we have voicemails? We'll have to see. We've got some correspondence to talk to you about. And we've also got some big news about an event coming up next month. So I think it's time to get started.
Let's do it.
All right.
All right, before we get too much into the gaming goodness, we want to thank our great sponsor at Myriad Games. He sponsors us on behalf of friendly professional gaming stores everywhere. And Myriad Games is going to be the site of much hoopla here in a few weeks.
Hoopla?
Yeah, shenanigans.
Oh.
Maybe not shenanigans.
Any tomfoolery?
Maybe.
Ballyhoo?
Ballyhoo, yes.
Okay.
Myriad Games is hosting their Myriad Games Celebration at both their stores in Salem and Manchester, New Hampshire.
Live free or die.
Live free or die, indeed. And they're going to be hosting all sorts of good things that's celebrating both the opening of their new Manchester store and 11 years in business.
So, 11 years?
Yeah, that's well done.
That's really impressive. Done. Yeah.
Well done.
How old is Dan? Because 11 years is a long time. I thought he was younger than me.
Yeah, he's like 18 probably.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's a wonder kid.
He started in the second grade.
That's right.
Want some Myriad money?
of course. Dan is also, through his Myriad Games, being a member of Gamesalute.com, which is a great site for gaming news and reviews and wild speculation. They are partnering with a charity called Extra Life. We mentioned this on our last episode, where they're going to be sponsoring a 24-hour game-a-thon for charity. So again, it's like a walk-a-thon, but without the exercise.
Right.
You can get people, you can sign up and have people sponsor you to play games for 24 hours straight. It's just $1 an hour, so it's $24.
Some difficult math there.
Yeah, I stumbled through it. And you can game at not only a store, but if your local gaming group wants to do something, or however you want to do it, whatever gets money to these great Children's Miracle Network and children's hospitals all around the country. I mean, John and I are both going to we've both signed up to sponsor Riley Hospital here in Indianapolis, which is a great children's hospital. I'm a former patient. They do good work because I'm still alive. So John has a little a challenge to throw down regarding that.
Yep. So and I can't remember if we actually mentioned this specifically last episode, but we actually are going to be going to New Hampshire. So we're actually going to be flying out and going to Myriad Games.
I hope we live free because I don't like the alternative.
Well, the plane, we're flying on pretty small planes. So, you know, pray for us. But anyway, so we're going to be there live with, you know, with Dan and Sarah and all the Myriad Games folks, and also with the D6 Generation folks playing games, having a great time. All of us are on this Game Salute team to raise money for the Children's Miracle Network. And like Cody said, he and I are both going to be raising money for Riley Children's Hospital. And So we, you know, part of this is raising money, of course, and so we want to kind of issue a challenge. We have each set a goal. What was your goal that you set for amount that you set? Was it 960 or 240 or?
I have no idea.
Okay, yeah. Well, when you sign up there, you have to set a certain amount that you're going for. So it's in the several hundred dollar range for each of us.
Right.
I think mine was 240. Just, you know, so 240 bucks. That's 10 people sponsoring for, you know, $1 an hour, $24. And the idea here is that we want to see how the Game On listeners might respond to this particular call here. And so we're going to have a bit of a competition here, and we'd love for you listeners to help us out. And there's really no prize involved here other than just some
pride.
Pride. Pride's important. But what we're going to do is in the show notes for this show on GameOnPodcast.com and also in our guild on BoardGameGeek.com, we're going to put the link to my donation page and Cody's donation page. And so we would like for you to vote with your dollar on who your favorite co-host is. So if it's me, the John, then you know you'll click on, you know, click on my link, and you know, any every dollar counts. You don't have to sponsor for the full 24 hours, but just, you know, yeah, every dollar will make a difference for these great hospitals. Or if you happen to like Cody better, then you can support him.
Now, now you have to pick the right horse in this race, because John is older and he will tire much more quickly than I will. I'll be doing Talisman at 3 in the morning, and he'll have been asleep for 6 hours.
And that's just because I've been playing Euro games, right?
Oh.
I was waiting for the
You finished the my joke. But, yeah, seriously, vote for me. And I handle the show notes anyway, so.
No, see, but Cody is cranky and finicky, and so after just a couple of hours of playing games, he'll get fed up, and he'll want to go do something else.
Doubtful, because I will have won.
Doubtful. So anyway, we would really appreciate your support in this endeavor. And,
sponsor me.
So we love your sponsorship. So you know, please go in, to the GameOnPodcast.com or to our guild on Board Game Geek. Click on one of those links, or hey, click on both of them if you want to support both of us. Every dollar counts.
Or click on mine twice.
Whatever. And you know, we want to see how much we can get leading up to this event on October the 16th. So when this episode comes out, which I think will be around the 4th of October. So,
don't look at me. You're putting it out.
No, I'm thinking about you. So this is, if you're listening to this right when it comes out, it's probably about the first week of October. So you got a couple weeks to get your donations in, but we really would appreciate it, and so we can meet our goals for these great hospitals.
Yeah, and if you'd like to set up something for yourself to join the Game Salute team and get your group involved, if you go to gamesalute.com, it's right there on the front page. Mm-hmm. If you want to get involved yourself.
Yeah, and keep in mind just one other thing about this Extra Life charity is that this was geared and kind of originally designed for video gamers.
Right.
And so when you sign up, and you'll see this on our page too, that it'll say, it has a kind of the stock text at the top of the page saying, I'm going to be playing video games for 24 hours to raise money. And then underneath that, we kind of both say, you know, no video games for us. But so that's the kind of where this came out of. And I think there's over 2,000 gamers that are going to be involved in this and raising money on this specific day. So if you want to, you know, either donate or get involved, we'd encourage you to go and check out the websites there. So that's what we're doing. And we're really excited, really, really excited about getting to go to New Hampshire and finally see Myriad Games in person. Yeah. We've talked about it so much, and to game with some of those great folks.
Have you ever been to New Hampshire?
I probably have driven through it. My dad is from Maine, and mm-hmm. so when I was a kid, we would drive from Virginia up to Maine. So we probably drove through New Hampshire, but I don't really remember it. How about you?
I have not.
Okay.
I've been to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. See, I don't remember Massachusetts either if I went through there. So maybe we could drive like into Boston for like an hour or something.
I've been to Boston. You can have all the fun.
Okay, I'll take the game on car and
wear my Colts jersey into Boston, pick fights with Patriots fans.
Scary.
get off my lawn.
We've actually got a buddy of ours who's coming up from Massachusetts mm-hmm. to game with us.
Fall River, Mass.
Yeah, from Fall River, Mass. So, anyway, enough from that's Myriad Games, and this you know, we're really, like I said, excited about what's coming up. So, let's move on to games we've been playing. And Cody, what have you been playing the last couple weeks?
Well, one game that has been plaguing my existence lately is a little game called Pooh the Card Game.
Plaguing your existence?
Yes.
Do go on.
Yeah, thanks. I was going to. Pooh the Card Game is put out by, I want to say, Catalyst Game Labs.
I don't know.
I'm going to go with that. Where are you at? Come on.
What do you mean?
You're supposed to know this stuff.
I don't own this game.
But essentially, it's this light card game about your monkeys, and you're flinging poo at other monkeys, and you're trying to inflict, you know, the most damage, air quote, and eliminate people. Fine, fine.
Poo inflicted damage.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, there's it's basically just kind of a very simple card game. You know, there's cards that you can play to get rid of poo on you, and special cards to dump a lot of poo on someone. So it's just this goofy little game. Fine, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
I was introduced to this. We went to a game night at our church. Now I had pretty. I don't want to say low expectations, because I it's not like I'm a superior gamer, but you know, I wasn't going to bring Descent. You know, uh-huh. I did bring Dice Town and taught that, and that was a hit.
Okay.
A lot of people like that, and we actually found another gamer couple at our church. Like, they're starting a Dresden Files role playing campaign here soon, and they were talking about this, and that was pretty neat, because it was we kind of got enveloped talking with them a little bit, and everyone else was like, what are they talking about? I'm like, oh yeah, I've played Traveler and Star Frontiers and yada yada yada, and so that was neat. But Poo the card game, we played with about two too many people, and it was about an hour long game.
So you played with how many? Two people?
Two too many people.
Is that two people?
Oh, right.
You get it? Huh.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Funny stuff. So, yeah.
Comedy.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you play, you know, Flux is a fun enough game. I know people on the guild hate it, but it's a fun enough game if it's like a 10 or 15 minute little thing. But if you're playing it for an hour, God help you. You know,
right.
Certain games you don't need to play for an hour. So we played Poo for an hour. It sucked.
For an hour?
Yeah.
Because then we this yeah. The reason why I know anything about this game is that I had some, and we'll get into this in a second, but we had some folks over for my birthday this past weekend.
Oh, you're getting into it. Go for it.
And, sorry, yeah, if you don't mind.
No, please.
And and our buddy Matt brought over a copy of the game, and he was very, very excited about it. And
I felt bad.
Cody was immediately like, oh, no,
because this is the next day. I'm like, what? I had told John about it no longer than 5 minutes before. You know, we were just chatting, and I was like, oh, I play this just awful game.
Yeah, and then Matt comes in, he holds up,
hey,
like, look what I brought.
I got Poo. I'm like, oh, like, great.
Oh, that's fantastic. So we played it, and I got to agree that I didn't – the concept is interesting, but I think it falls into that category of games that is like I can't even think of a good example, but of the game that you bring it out and everybody goes, oh, that looks interesting, or oh, that looks shocking, or whatever, and then you know you bring it out and you play it and it's like, oh, okay. Oh, like the Suicide Bomber card game. Remember, mm-hmm. A couple years ago, yeah. We got a copy of that, and you know, you look at it and go, ooh, how, you know, crazy. But it really it basically just amounts to attack cards, and then you either take it or you defend, and then if you get too close to being out of the game, you play a card to clean yourself off. That's pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've been seeing this game everywhere. I know Myriad Games, their latest Session Impressions, I think, is dealing with Poo the card game.
Well, it won an Origins Award.
For what?
I think for like best card game.
No.
No, I'm serious. Yeah. So I don't know how that happened.
Dan's on the Myriad. Dan's on the Gamma board, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I believe so.
We need to shake things up.
Something, yeah.
Poo the card game.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. But no, it was nice. I taught Dice Town. That was pretty well received. Got to play Castle Ravenloft. My buddy Dare came over and played around to that. We played a scenario. You know, we had played, I think, the Icon of Ravenloft scenario when we demoed it.
The one with the chapel.
Right, yeah. The Icon of Ravenloft. And we played a session that was just brutal. You had to, amongst the whole party, accumulate 12 treasures and get out of Castle Ravenloft.
Huh.
And you get a treasure every time you kill a monster, right?
Uh-huh.
But not all of the treasure cards are actual treasure. Some of them are just like something good happens, but it doesn't count as a treasure and goes away. You know, they're fortune cards.
Oh.
So we were drawing about every one of those, and we just got shellacked.
Wow.
It was nice because I got to see what the other side of it is. You know, we were pretty successful when we played. This was, you know, the game just trounced us.
Huh.
And so it was kind of neat, but that is a good game.
You like
that,
it?
That is just a straight up a good game.
Yeah, I think I really am going to pick that one up just because it looks like it's going to be a good one to play with my son because, mm-hmm. You know, it's not as complex as Descent, but it'll give that same kind of feel.
And it's one of the few games where the solo play looks very attractive to me.
Hmm.
I'm
not sure if I've ever heard you say that about a game with solo play.
Yeah, I'd like to try one. I mean, I inherently feel kind of dorky doing it. You know, it's like I'm going to play a board game by myself. But
yeah.
I was talking to Darren. He said, yeah, the solo playing, this is nice because it just goes, it's quick. And there's actually a couple solo-only scenarios in the book.
Oh, okay.
That are tailored just for solo. And then you could do any of them solo. You just have to keep track of more characters. Huh. But that's pretty neat. I got to play Ascension, Chronicle of the God Slayer, which you had mentioned as a deck-building game.
Yep.
Very, very good game. Much better than Heroes of Graxia. And I could play more of it. We played two games, and I was very impressed by it. It's a nice deck-building game. And to me, that's what Thunderstone should have been, was Ascension. I was like, well, this was probably what they were going for. Because Thunderstone is trash. Heroes of Graxia is just too much math.
Good lord.
This is... Well, Thunderstone's a terrible game.
It's not a terrible game.
It's a terrible game. Hmm. The Ascension was a nice mix. You had that fantasy theme, and it was just kind of well put on there. My only complaint is some of the art on it, on Ascension, is pretty bad.
Oh, it looks
looks like colored pencil. I drew a knight. that's great, son.
We'll put it on a card in this game.
Oh goodness!
I think that game was designed by like former Magic Pro Tour players.
Yeah, like I think like three Pro Tour players came together, and that's kind of people you'd want to get a game together.
Yeah,
and then I guess the only other thing, I haven't really played this, but I picked up the new D&D Essentials Rules Compendium.
You did.
D&D Wizards of the Coast is putting out these line of Essentials products for their 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons line, where it's basically this core set of 10 items that will always be in store so that new players know what they need to get. Not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
They've basically put all of the rules that have been updated from 2008 to the present in one book. And it's pretty much just a book of rules. So it's this about 300-page book. It's you know, maybe an inch, 2 inches thick. But it's digest size. It's like it's like a 6x9 book. If you've ever seen the Savage Worlds role-playing game book, it's about that size. So it's weird seeing a D&D. It's not hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's it retail for?
$20.
Not bad.
Yeah, all of the essential stuff, it's pretty good. I mean, this is pretty much every rule you would need as a DM all in one book, and it's just getting, it's got a great index. You're like, I'm grabbed. What does that mean? Flip, flip, flip. It means blah. It's just all in one book. So
what would be the benefit of getting the full player's handbook then? I mean, is it just more in-depth?
Here's the catch, my friend.
Okay.
With D&D Essentials, you've got... you've got this rules compendium, and then the player books, because let me back up, excuse me. The player's handbook as it stands now, mm-hmm. the old player's handbook, it has races and classes. It has stuff on how to make a character. Yeah. That's kind of your front half, and then your back half is your rules.
Right.
So what they do now with Essentials is they have just all the rules in one book, the rules compendium that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to release classes and races in these kind of, they're in two books, two of these, like I think they're like $20 books, and they have rules for playing. You know, one of them's clerics, wizards, fighters, and thieves, and one of them's druids, paladins, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh.
So it's...
So you have to buy more products than if you're...
You
I'm just trying to understand, you know, if I'm a... If you're a new player and you would say, go and buy these Essentials products,
mm-hmm.
well then who's buying the player's handbook?
That's the catch. The player's handbook, as it stands now, is near obsolete.
Really?
Yeah. And they've come out and said it's not 4.5. They've made a big push on that. And in some ways they're right, in some ways they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because with this, yeah, you could play an Essentials character next to a regular 4E character. And the rule set works fine. They didn't completely change it. But they've made enough improvements to the Essentials characters where... They didn't simplify it, but there's a lot less going on, but mm-hmm. with the same amount of power. So it's kind of like, why wouldn't you play an Essentials character? You see what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's just another whole bunch of products you got to buy. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, you don't have to. I mean, it's like any RPG product. No one's going to take your books away.
Right.
But it's almost like they're just going to phase out the old books because you don't need them.
Hmm.
In a way... Part of me likes it because all the rules are in one $20 book.
Yeah.
They're not spread out amongst the player's handbook and the DMG 2. Everything's in that book.
Now, contrast that with the Redbox reissue, because I saw that in the store a couple days ago. Yeah. And how is that different from these other books?
It's not really. It's they kind of have, you know, they have a buying path, if you will. So,
do they call it a buying
path? They don't. It would be funny.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
So imagine the red box as kind of like the root of the tree here, okay?
Uh-huh.
So if you have people that want to learn D&D or your whole group, no one knows how to play it, you get this red box. It teaches you everything. It's everything you need. It has dungeons. It has a dragon in it. You get what you pay for.
Dungeons and dragons.
Someone actually commented. They're like, hey, this thing's, you get what you pay for. You get dungeons. You get dragons. You know.
Wow.
But it has...
It's all, red.
It has all the counters, all the maps, all the information, all the rules, everything you need to play, I think, two levels of a character.
Okay.
Not bad. And this is meant to take complete newbies to not just D&D, but to RPGs in general, and bring them up to second level. So then you have the path kind of forks. It's like if you're a player, they say, well, there's these two players' books you should get. The one, you know, they one covers half the classes and the races, one covers the other one. And then if you're a DM, go this path and get like rules compendium, and they have, you know, they have the dungeon tile sets that they put out.
Yeah,
they've put out. They're going to have three of the Essentials products are just dungeon tile sets.
I think I saw those in the store too.
Yeah, that. So the basic dungeon will never be sold out, because that's what they ran into with the dungeon tiles. Is the very first set, which I had a few of, it went out of print, and it was the bread and butter of dungeons. You know. Rooms, hallways, really basic stuff, and people couldn't get them because it was out of print, and they were paying 60, 70, 80, 90 bucks on eBay for it.
Wow.
So three of the things are completely optional anyway. They're just dungeon tiles. You know, there's a city set, a wilderness set, and a dungeon set. I think one of the 10 is actually the official dice, so you can just skip that. So they basically tell the DM, don't worry about buying the player's books. Just get there's a DM and a monster kit, which is a DMG and a monster manual. And then the players just buy the player's book. Don't worry about the DM stuff. So the initial buy-in isn't as much. It's just a little more complicated. Because it used to be you buy Player's Handbook, DMG, Monster Manual, $100, bam.
Right.
And now it's kind of
Or if you're a player, you buy the player's handbook, and that's all you needed. Really, right. And dice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it still works out to be cheaper, I think. I think people are just kind of what is this? You know, because they really don't want to market it as 4.5.
Sure.
Because 3.5 didn't work so well. I mean, it was a good system, but the marketing was terrible for it.
Yeah.
So now they're kind of like, oh no, this is more for new players, and there's enough crunch in there for veteran players.
And I guess that seems to be just the trend, is that everything that's coming out these days, especially from Wizards of the Coast, it's all about the new player. Bring in the new player, bring in the new player. So, I mean, it's pretty much hooking that person on the path of retail enlightenment and getting them to buy more stuff. Well, I mean, I don't know. It sounds interesting. I mean, it sounds like if you're brand new to D&D, that might be a good way to go. Yeah.
And there's enough stuff in there. Like I said, I picked it up, and I know 4E pretty well. They've made a few changes, nothing earth-shattering, but they've made a few good changes to it, and I think there's some good stuff there. I don't know how much I would mix them. You know, it's kind of like I would run an Essentials only campaign, just seeing what the characters look like from there. It's pretty neat. But I don't know how much I'd mix it. And like I said, it's kind of like once you've seen the Essentials character, you really wouldn't want to play the old versions, I don't think, because I think the Essentials are better. So
is D&D still healthy?
Oh yeah, I would say it's quite healthy. It's I was worried that
you had speculation about there being it being in decline.
That year after 4E came out, morale was pretty low on D&D. Everyone was just ragging on the new edition, and you had the old people that just said, "Oh, it's just nothing like the previous editions," which it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty grim. And they've kind of pulled themselves up, and they put this new product line is really going to help.
Cool.
They're getting more. I've not seen this many new people getting in this new demographic of people getting into D&D that I have ever. Like, you're seeing a lot of the, you know, make your jokes, a lot of the video game crowd is crossing over, you know, the penny arcade movement, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those people are finally crossing over and just, you know, gorging themselves on it the way I did when I was 13 and discovered the game. So that's been kind of neat to see, but it seems like they're targeting a little higher age now. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, is that all you've been playing?
Yeah. that was just going to be a little sidebar, but that's
Well done.
D&D editorial. What about you?
That's interesting. You know, I appreciate that the kind of update there, because I had not heard about that stuff. So
there you go.
What have I been playing? Well, like I said, my birthday was this past weekend, and I continue to get older, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And we got some folks together to watch the Colts game and to play some games. So Cody came over, and our buddy Matt, and a few other folks. And actually, two guests that we had that were basically brand new people that I had never met before coming to my birthday party is a gentleman named Trent Howell, who is the... he's kind of the
progenitor.
The progenitor of a website and a series of video reviews and a blog called The Board Game Family. So it's theboardgamefamily.com. And he's a guy who's married, has four children, and they play games together. And they've done, I want to say it's like 50 or 60 or more video reviews of games where he really includes his family in the reviews of those games. And it's really, really cool stuff. And it's neat to see, you know, kids involved and, you know, teaching games and stuff like that. So so he had contacted us saying he was going to be in town and, hey, could we get together and play games? And it just so happened to fall on my birthday. So I'm like, hey, come to the get together and we'll play something. So he and his business associate came and we ended up playing a game of Alien Frontiers.
Of course we did.
Which we've been playing a lot of Alien Frontiers lately, and we've heard a lot of great things on Board Game Geek and our guild. Seems like this we've generated a good bit of buzz from our review and our talking up of this game. So had a great time playing that. Played the full four player game, and I believe Trent won that game.
I believe so.
So well done, Trent. So yeah, so that's as I can't say any more about it. It's a great game. Cody and I had a chance to play a full game of Rune Wars, a two-player game of Rune Wars.
We did,
and that was a lot of fun. Which mm-hmm. That's one that we're going to talk about that in a little bit. We haven't gotten to the table very often, and actually after our top 11, we know they kind of prompted us to, hey, let's get that one out and play it. So Cody won that one, unfortunately. Woo! But
the undead are rough.
They're really rough. They zerg you. They really do kind of swarm. And I played the elves, and they were full of influence, but little else. it's really, really a great game, though, so enjoyed that one. Also, we played at the birthday party the Back to the Future card game, and we played several games of Zombie Dice, which I picked up my own copy of Zombie Dice, and Cody's right from what he said last episode. It's a really fun game. It's just nice and light, and played with my kids, actually, and they really enjoyed that, too. And I don't know if we mentioned this before, the start player mechanic is whoever won the last game or whoever can say brains with the most feeling. And so my kids got a real kick out of that. And my daughter was actually singing the RE Your Brain song by Jonathan Colton.
Oh, wow.
So we're playing Zombie Dice and she's going, all we want to do is eat your brains. It was very cute. So that's pretty much what I've been playing. A little bit of Guitar Hero, actually. I'm just kind of getting into the video game realm.
Did you hear the Guitar Hero board game's coming out?
Yes, I did hear that from my son. No. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Fancy Flats tune Guitar Hero board game?
They are not.
No, they're not.
Okay. Well, no, because...
it's $100. They've got guitar tab components. It's wonderful.
My son Ethan did come up and say, after playing Guitar Hero a couple times, that he had a really great idea for a game, and it was Guitar Hero, and I said... They've already come out with Guitar Hero. You just played it. And he says, no, this is going to be the board game. So I don't know if
you heard that from me. Yeah, you told me that.
But yeah, so I was like, I don't think that would really work as a board game. But anyway, keep hope alive. So that's pretty much what I've been playing. I downloaded Backgammon for my phone.
Oh, geez. That's about all the Android phones can handle. Hey!
Yeah. Well, here's the sad thing.
You played any Teachu on it? Played any Kingsbury?
Quiet.
I think not.
Quiet.
Get off my lawn.
Backgammon's a great classic game, you know, a great ancient game, and I've never actually played it before. Until I got this application, so now I've learned how to play it, and it's pretty fun. I kind of want to get a regular backgammon set and play that with Ethan. I think that'd be fun.
Sorry, I was playing Roll Through the Ages on my iPhone.
You put your phone down.
Keep talking about a backgammon.
All right, so that's pretty much what we've been playing. Well, it's another episode of the GM Academy. Chancellor Cody L. Jones presiding.
Salutations to you.
And we have a plea for help here, Chancellor Jones. Are you ready to listen?
I am always ready.
All right. And this comes from M-E.
From you?
No, but oh. From M-E. Oh. And M-E writes, I'm looking to run a game of Hollow Earth Expeditions. I have never GM'd a game before. Any help you could give me with this game or sites pointing to some helpful hints would be great. Thanks. He says, love the podcast. New format is okay, but miss some of the organization.
Mm.
So that editorial comment aside, what do you have to say for Mr. M.E.?
Well, you've picked a great game, not only as the first time to GM, but just a great game in general. This is going to be very easy to GM, I think. You have a rules light system that's all about pushing the story forward. So I'm assuming you have the Hollow Earth Expedition core rulebook. And if you do, the adventure in the back of that is going to be very good for you. Just read up on that. Don't worry so much about the stats and a lot of the crunch, you know, the rule heavy stuff. You want to be more sure of the story, the general arc of the story, and you can deal with the crunch when it comes up, because honestly, it's the player's first time through the system too, as far as the rules go. So if you're a little slow in getting the rules, then they're going to be slow too. You know, they're not experts of this game. But what they're looking for you to have is a good hold of the story. So just be ready for the players to do something completely different, I would say. But just if they're playing the sample characters out of the book, or if they've made their own characters, with Hollow Earth Expedition, you really want to tell them to play up their archetypes and play up their motivations and
play their flaws too. Is that what it's called? Flaws.
Yep. Yeah. And play their flaws as well. Whatever gives them the style points, whatever you're using for style chips, keep those flowing, because once you start handing those out, it's a lot like, just, you know, it's Pavlov's dogs, rewarding good behavior. I guess it's nothing like Pavlov's dogs.
No,
it's not the Science Academy. It's the GM Academy.
Please do not treat your players like dogs.
Right. But, you know, if, you know, say Jerry does a really good job and just really role play something up.
Jerry usually does a good job.
And you toss him a style chip. I have seen it happen. I've seen groups that normally are just combat heavy and don't give a lick about role playing. They start seeing these little chips flying around. Oh, they get in the game real quick.
Excited, huh?
Yep. So just really work with them to have them role play their archetypes, their motivations, their flaws. And don't get hung up in the crunch of it. Just keep the story moving. And with Hex, that is it's an easy system to do. One other resource I would point you to is the Exile Games forums. Exile Games are the company that makes Hollow Earth Expedition. So if you go to exilegames.com, click on their forums. They have a rather small but a very dedicated community. They helped me out when I first started, and there's a lot of good folks over there. So head on over there. You can get some good info there. But with Hex, you just keep the story moving and just think Indiana Jones. If the characters are standing around for more than 5 minutes, something happens.
Blow something up.
Yeah. The idea is that I ran a Hex campaign, and the one maxim that I had in my head is they're not going to stand around and plan things. It should just be, the word should be exhaustion in your head, because they're just going from one peril to another, to another, to another, and then a cliffhanger.
And I think that, and I played in one of the campaigns that you ran, and that was one of the interesting things about it, was we did have a couple times where we were trying to stop and figure out where we were going to go and what we were going to do. And Cody was great as a GM. He would just be like, you know, all of a sudden you hear gunshots, and we're like, what? Gunshots? Okay. And we're still trying to sort of plan, and Cody wouldn't let up on it. He'd be like, you know, no, you hear more gunshots. Okay, now you hear a car driving up. You know, it's like, oh, what are we going to do? You know?
Yep.
So it really created a lot of good tension there. I mean, I think
I hope that was helpful.
Yeah, yeah. M.E., I hope that helped you out there.
Write us another email once you've run your first game. Let us know how it went and any other follow-up questions you have.
Yeah, definitely.
But you've picked a great game. I know it's one I recommended, so I'm kind of patting myself on the back. But for first-time GMs especially, that's probably one of the best, because it's just all about telling a good story and rewarding players for helping you tell that story.
Yeah, this is a good topic. We can kind of expand upon this a little bit, because as we've talked about for many, many moons now, John wants to GM.
Right.
But, and I, you know, I basically just keep procrastinating because I'm just nervous about it. And I've picked my game. I'm definitely going to do Rogue Trader, the Warhammer 40,000 game from Fantasy Flight. And I've got the book. Cody even bought a copy of the book.
Yep.
Thanks. And
it's my accountability copy.
That's it. Yeah. I'll feel bad if I don't run it because he went and spent the money on it. But
thanks, Myriad Dan.
Yeah. So it's a really cool game as far as what I'm reading up on it and everything. And one of the things that I like about it so much is that you're basically playing a crew of a ship. A giant ship, and it's led by this rogue trader who is kind of kind of a Captain Kirk sort of badass character, but even more so, he's like basically been given this writ of trade from the government, from the emperor himself, that allows him to travel to other galaxies and travel outside of the realm of the Imperium to go and claim territory and seek fortune and all that kind of stuff, all in sort of the name of the emperor. And so, it's got sort of a, I wouldn't say it really has a Star Trek feel to it. I don't think it'll have that kind of a feel to it because it's a much darker, grittier sort of a thing. But in a way, it almost seems like it might end up being kind of like Serenity, but darker and working for the government.
Yeah. And on a lot larger scale.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're driving around this huge capital ship.
Yeah, and these ships have 30, 40,000 people on them. Right. I mean, it's almost like a city. There are people that are on the ship that were born on the ship and have lived there their entire lives, that kind of stuff. These are also really old ships, too. So it's not like, the shiny new Enterprise. It's like this ship is 10,000 years old. So I think it's going to be a really good game. And one thing, reasons why I chose it is that the dice system on it is just a percentile-based system. And it seems like it's, a very cut-and-dried sort of a thing. You have some sort of a characteristic, and you have to roll under it to be able to to do certain things. So, I'm about to get started, and I'm kind of making this maybe the last conversation that I have about this before I just take the plunge and just do it. So this is my, GM Academy session with you, Chancellor Jones.
Okay.
And I guess my main question that I want to ask, and I hope that what I'm asking here will maybe echo with some of you listeners out there who might want to consider running a game of some kind, And again, if maybe you're a board gamer and you've got a group of folks that are interested in trying out RPGs, and maybe you're all sitting around the table being novices. I have the benefit of having Cody, who's a very experienced GM at the table. Really, the group that I'm putting together, I also have Kaylin will be at the table. She's an experienced GM, and I'll have a lot of really experienced role players in this group that we're putting together. As far as planning and putting things together, I guess what I want to know is when you're preparing for a game session, how much are you writing down? What do you have in front of you, and how much of it is just kind of on the fly from your imagination? Now, I understand that, the more experience you have, probably the more you're just kind of pulling out of your head. But as far as, what should I bring to the first game? I'm going to be doing a pre-made adventure.
Okay.
So I'm doing the one that's already in the Rogue Trader book there. So don't read it.
Oh, I haven't.
And, so, we'll do character creation, all that kind of stuff. But as far as if I'm sitting down and I'm continuing the story from point B to point C on, a certain week, what kind of preparation should I do, and what should I have in front of me?
Okay. What I would do in that case. So again, that you're saying point B to point C. So this is something you're creating past the.
Well, no, I was just saying, let's say we're doing a four session campaign. Uh-huh. Story arc, and we're in week two or something like that, we're already in the story a little bit, and now it's, hey, see you guys next week, and then what do I need to do to prepare for the next week, and what do I need to bring to the table?
What I usually do is, there's some GMs that kind of have the sandbox theory, where it's just like, whatever they decide to do, we'll just do the story around it. And that's kind of cool in theory, but it's very hard to execute because you don't know what the players will pick and you can't really prep. And it just turns out to be not very good. I don't like the other side of the coin, railroading, where you force them on a plot and no matter what, they have to stick to exactly what you think. I don't like that either.
Because then the players feel railroaded, right? They feel like they're being forced into something. Okay.
The way I like to do it is I look at it like a waypoint system or like checkpoints on a road.
Okay.
So I plan, like for my Hollow Earth Expedition game, that's the campaign that I ran pretty recently. I would say, okay, in the story, they have just escaped the Nazi encampment, and by the end, I would like them to be at the ancient Mayan temple. And what couple of things will I have in between there? Because usually what how you got from point to point, I just kind of made up. I just kind of went with how the session was going. I said, maybe they go through the jungle and find this. Mm-hmm. You know, but I didn't really have any loose notes. But what I did have notes on were these waypoints where, okay, they escape the Nazi camp and they encounter a Tyrannosaurus. You know, I have that written down. So that's a waypoint, so I have the stats kind of written down. And I don't have all the stats in the book. I may just have a page number, or I might just have relevant things, mm-hmm. you know, the things that I know he'll use. And then from there, it might be they find a bunch of cargo cultists, and this is their motivation. You know, it's kind of like think acting. It's like, you know, what's my motivation? It's like, you know, the cargo cultists are, you have their base disposition, and then that's about all you can put down because you don't know how the group's going to react.
Right.
You can think you know, but they'll throw something you have no idea.
Okay. So would you say it's wise or unwise to kind of plan out not the personalities, but you know, if you're trying to nudge things in a particular direction, I mean, you know, would you have things that you would expect your NPC to already be wanting them to say?
Or absolutely.
Certain situation?
So for the major NPCs, you know, I pretty much jot down, you know, I have their name, and then I'll have maybe a disposition or two, you know, grumpy or by the book. Or, you know, I might even list like a character or something that they're based or a person that they're based off that I know.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's how I do a lot of it. It's like, oh, this is like Colonel Clink, but like the, you know, but with a twist, you know, uh-huh. Simple things like that. And then I pretty much, the NPCs are there for a reason. So I'll even write down or just note in my head their hook. It's like, all right, these guys tell them about the secret Mayan temple. Okay. You know, that's his goal.
These guys capture them and, you know.
Right. And beyond that, I kind of just let that, you know, play out. It's like, how did the adventurers stumble upon the camp? Did they sneak in? Did they blow in? You know, because that will change how he greets them
right.
and how he reacts to them. But eventually, you know, the players probably won't out and out kill him unless, you know, they see him as a threat. So I wouldn't go down that road. But, you know, eventually that hook's going to come out, whether it be more forceful because he's mad at the characters or more friendly because he's friendly with them. I just have that hook written down. How he gives that hook is dependent on what happens. And I'll let play dictate that. I can't write that down in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the stuff, I mean, it just comes just off the cuff, you know. Someone will say a silly remark, and then based on his characteristics, well, he's, you know, old-fashioned and he's incontinent, or you know, and he gives a response.
Incompetent or incontinent?
A little of both.
Okay.
And you know, I'll just do any responses off of that. Okay. The idea is you just want to be pretty quick with it. Even if it's just a silly one-word thing, or if it's a question in response to a question. Keep the ball in the player's court, and they won't think, you know. I'm not saying I'm this great DM, but, you know, my goal was to make the players think that any question they asked, I had a prepared response for.
Uh-huh.
It's like, they asked me that, oh, well, I've got that written down. I don't have that written down. Yeah. I have the reason he exists and how, you know, two words that sum up his personality.
Okay.
And the rest I'll make up as we go.
Okay. So that's really helpful. So you wouldn't plan it out too heavily, just waypoints, just kind of encounters or ideas of, you know, a beginning point and an end point, and then sort of some points along the way.
Yeah, and a good rule of thumb is plan more than you think, because you'll usually never get that far. And that much always happened with me. It's like, okay, they should be able to get through these three waypoints and then, you know, arrive at the cliffhanger.
And they don't,
just because you play it in your head, and you never think about complications. You just think, well, naturally they'll go to that control panel and they'll do that. That just seems like the obvious thing, because you've written this adventure.
Sure, it so seems in your obvious head, to you.
It just
yeah.
seems logical. Like, oh, yeah, you do that, and then they'll go here. Oh, this will even be a quick night.
Yeah.
And they may get stuck, and, you know, they end up halfway through.
Okay.
So, yeah, just, you know, come up with a few waypoints, things that, you know, encounters that need to happen. And then everything else in between. I mean, I could give you an example based on a movie or something.
Oh, no. Sure. Okay. You got one in your head?
Yeah, I could come up with something. So say you've got the original Star Wars movie, right?
Uh-huh. Okay. That's a great movie.
Fantastic movie. I think it's going to get popular.
That someday. Lucas fellow, I think he might go places.
Maybe. But if you think in that movie where you're like middle of A New Hope, you have Luke Skywalker has to encounter Tusken Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
How he does it, how he gets there, how he encounters them doesn't matter. He just has to encounter them so that Obi-Wan Kenobi can show up and scare him off.
Show up and scare him off, okay.
Right. And then he gets to Obi-Wan Kenobi's hut. How he gets there, the details there, not that important.
But then he needs to talk to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right, and then that's a waypoint. Obi-Wan Kenobi talks to him, tells him about the Force, tells him about going to Alderaan. And then, you know, another waypoint may be, you know, Luke has to end up back at his aunt and uncle's homestead. Mm-hmm. You know, does he get there because he's angry like he did in the movie? Maybe. Does he get there because he's bored or sad or a million other reasons? Maybe. You know, it depends on how your player is. But that's a waypoint. And as a GM, you can gently nudge if they're not getting the hint. But, you know, no matter what, and he'll get back there, and that's another waypoint. So that's just an example. I mean, that's okay. Something off the top of my head.
That makes sense because, you know, reading these adventures, especially the pre-made adventures, you know, and I hope to eventually mature as a GM where I can start coming up with my own stuff. But, you know, these adventures, it makes it look like, you know, it's a story. It's telling you a story. It's like, you know, you're part of the party goes here and they find this and they need to go to this and they fight this person and then they go here and they find this out. You know, it's difficult to not want to be that railroading type of GM that's like, you know, this is what the book says, and so if it doesn't go in this direction, then I got to force it in that direction and you know, so to keep it from coming off the rails. You know?
And it's funny, I like doing my own material, not because I'm such a great GM or I've been doing it for so long. It's easier for me to run because published adventures for me are hard to run because, you know, I think of waypoints like dots on a line. You know, they have to hit these dots. And the line is just all of the stuff in between that the players really come up with I facilitate. And on published adventures, you know, they have that very dictated. It's like they go through the city and they go down through this specific block and they see these specific things. And it's just like, you know, I just need to know the main plot points and then the big finish for the night.
That's really good advice. So, all right, well, thank you, Chancellor.
No, no problem.
And that closes the GM Academy. If you have any questions for the GM Academy regarding role-playing games for our Chancellor here, please contact us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Oh, sorry, Chancellor. He was taking a sip of his post-class Pepsi there.
My libation.
His libation. So we would encourage you to write us in if you have any questions about that. So moving on. All right, so steering away from the RPG front, done a lot of RPGs this episode.
It's nice.
No, it's a good thing.
I mean, I don't want to do it every episode because I know some of the board gamers are like, come on.
It's like, I'm deleting this episode. But no, we like to dabble in lots of different kinds of gaming. And but let's move back into kind of a board game topic here because when we did our top 11 2 weeks ago, you know, you brought up that Rune Wars was in your top 11, but you said you'd only had a chance really to play it once.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of decided the next week that, oh, you know, let's get that to the table again. And after playing that game and enjoying it so much, we really got to sort of talking about this, about how we have a lot of games that just never seem to make it to the table enough times to really kind of marinate, if you will, you know, to get a really good idea of how the game goes. I don't know. I tend to be really a product of the hype machine, a product of the cult of the new, and always playing the new thing. You know, but I think this is a problem that is in a lot of game groups.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we have the problem because we're podcasters, and that's a problem in and of itself.
It's a huge problem.
But you know, we always want to bring kind of new material to you guys, so we find that most of the time we're playing a newish game. And then the next time we get together to play, well, we've got another game to play. And right. We're not saying it's a burden, but I know a lot of gaming groups that if you have one or two people in the group that are really into the hobby and kind of getting the newest stuff all the time, that you're like, they're always the guy, hey, guys, I got something new. Hey, guys, I got something new.
Yeah, I'm definitely that guy.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it was interesting because I thought it was just kind of our dilemma because, oh, we're podcasters and, you know, we have these things to review. It's like, no, I see that in a lot of groups where it's just like, hey, got something new. I can be like that with RPGs. It's a little harder because, you know, you have to commit to a campaign, but, you know, I have a shelf full of great RPGs some of them may never see the table, and they really should. And, you know, I maybe should do a year-long Desolation campaign, but something shiny may come out for 4th edition, and I'll run that instead.
Yep.
So that problem's everywhere.
And it's the same thing for, definitely for board games. Is, you know, we had, I think I mentioned several games on my top 11 that I haven't played in a year.
No.
And not because I don't own them. I mean, they're sitting on my shelf, and they just haven't come out, you know, and I think this is a real problem, and you know, and I don't know exactly what the remedy for it is, because we have a limited amount of time that we can play things. You know, I sort of found that for me, I think that I'm starting to dial down my Cult of the New status a little bit. That, you know, every new thing that comes out now, I'm really taking a much more critical eye on those things, and I hate to admit it, but I really am starting to employ the Jones theory a lot more.
You hate to admit it. It's a worldwide, world-renowned theory.
It's a path to retail enlightenment, isn't it?
Now, the retailers don't want you to Jones theory.
Well, I know. It's a path to actual fulfillment. Then. Right. But, you know, when I get a game now, I really am, or I'm looking at possibly getting a game, I am really comparing it to things that I already have in my collection, and do I need to have this in my collection? And you know, even more so, you know, am I going to be able to bring this out more than one time? Because I mean, I even own a lot of games that I think are really, really good that they're just not hitting the table. You know, you'll notice that on this episode, we're actually not doing a game review. It's the first time in 52 episodes that we have not done a game review.
Wow.
And it's mainly just because we spent time playing stuff that we've, you know, either already reviewed or that we've had for a while, and we didn't buy one. Into the Cult of the New.
Poo the game.
Oh,
Poo
you're right. We game. Did talk about Poo the card game. Okay, so
not an actual review, but
wasn't actually a full review.
The game sucks. So.
But you know, we really
the streak
invested
is alive.
Time. We invested some time in really, you know, playing Rune Wars, and you know, we like to play it again, and you know, get it to the table one more time. So, even more times actually.
Yeah.
Because one of the other things that you mentioned on your top 11 is that Fury of Dracula had moved from number 2. Down to number 10, right?
Yeah, something like that.
And I think one of the reasons why it moved is because you've played it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and after you play something, and Kingsburg, same thing, you know, that you play something enough times, and yeah, you're kind of shaking your head at me, but what I would, you tell me if I'm wrong or not, is that if you play something enough times, you really start to see the sort of the true colors of what a game is.
I get what you're saying there.
And the sheen of the newness starts to wear off of it, and you start to really see whether something has staying power and longevity.
Alien Frontiers didn't help Kingsburg's case.
No, that's true.
Yeah, I will say that.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I'm starting to see, and I don't mean this as a statement to puff myself up, but I'm kind of seeing where my how I approach games and how I think about games, whether it be right or wrong, I'm seeing where they all connect, because you have the Jones theory where, you know, it's about keeping your collection, you know, manageable, where things hit the table more often. You know, I'm seeing that kind of bleed into other things where I have my own Richard postulate where, you know, if John owns a game, I'll think twice about getting it, because, you know, I was putting my Christmas list together, uh-huh. My Christmas wish list together, and I put Rune Wars on there because uh-huh. I'm like, I like Rune Wars. We had fun playing it. And then I thought, and I took it off because I was just, you know, when would I play it and not have John over? Or when could I not borrow it from John if I needed to?
Yeah, that's true.
And I really have to step back and not only look at it from a Jones theory perspective, but look at it from, am I just collecting or am I getting things that I'm going to play? Because Rune Wars would have just been a thing to collect.
Right.
It would have been like something cool in my closet. Like, hey, I've got Rune Wars. That's cool. But it's never going to come to the table unless John's here. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's I'm seeing all of that connect, like how I'm approaching game purchases where, you know, I want to be more deliberate about it. You know, I know people that limit their purchases to quarterly or even yearly, where they say, you know, I'm gonna keep a list of what looks good, and then, you know, at a certain day, you know, four times a year or once a year, you know, these will be larger orders, mind you.
Right.
I'm going to place that order, but I'm going to give it time and hopefully give a chance to play it a few times and hear news on it and pick the ones that I really want. And that's admirable to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, just saying like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. You know,
it's almost tempting to do that with us and have like Gen Con be our big time to buy games, you know, save up our money all year long and just do that.
So I'd do you one better. I would say like 2 months after Gen Con is good. because then you can play everything at Gen Con.
Oh yeah,
and then hit and not, you know, because Gen Con I would worry if that was your big spending time. Like I'm not going to do any. I might do little things like a card game here or there. I'm not going to do any major purchases except for once a year. If Gen Con's that time, I know personally I would probably do a lot of impulse buying where, you know, you see the it's like you see the people standing in line at the Fantasy Flight booth. Whatever they're standing in line for, it must be mine.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have Cadwal and City of Thieves.
I was trying to escape Gen Con this year without an impulse purchase, and that one sitting on my shelf, it needs to go. I'll probably be selling it.
So to me, it's like I can play all these games. Like, you know, I can play Death Angel, and I can play, you know, Civilization, the board game. I don't know if it's going to be out in 2 months. Probably not.
Maybe so.
It might be. And you know, Lord of the Rings, the LCG, whatever it may be. I can play those, and then I can see the news and see the rules as they come out. And then in 2 months, you know, maybe November can be your big purchasing time, or October or something like that. You know,
yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there. I don't want to go down that route with this discussion, but I've seen the trend. More and more people are doing quarterly game purchases and even yearly game purchases.
Yeah, and you know, not to deliberately give an additional plug to Myriad Games, our sponsor, but you know, their monthly MVP program. You know, you're basically paying a certain amount of money, and it's, you know, turned into store credit, Myriad money in their store. But as far as I know, I don't think that stuff expires.
No.
You know, so I mean, if you did want to do a quarterly game purchase or a yearly game purchase, you could almost use the Myriad program as like a savings account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they're kind of kill, and when you're ready to buy, you can buy from there. But yeah, I really like that idea though of just taking a closer look and being more careful about what you buy, and then endeavoring to really get things to the table multiple times. You know, and that might just mean that new stuff doesn't come to the table quite as often.
Yeah. I have a decent collection. I would say it's pretty modest, probably compared with other, you know, your average BGG-er. But even then, I sometimes think maybe my selection is just a little too big.
Yeah.
Because I see plenty of games there that, you know, I haven't played Last Night on Earth in months.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that game. I've not played it in months, though, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just... You know, it's not something I would Jones theory out because I just don't want to toss games for the sake of tossing them. But I really just kind of look at my game collection and I'm like, you know, I more of these need to hit the table. And in the time that we have, there's usually other things we need to play or right. want to play.
Well, and so I think that maybe a good strategy would be that if you buy, for one thing, like we were saying before, limit the purchases that you're making, you know.
Make it a bigger deal.
Try before you buy if you can do that. You know, I mean, you know, sorry, another plug for Miri, but the game share thing is great.
Jeez.
No, I mean,
did you get a little extra Miri money?
I didn't. No, but no, honestly, the game share thing is great, and even this new board game exchange thing that's a site mm-hmm. where it's kind of like Netflix. You know, where you can try stuff before you buy. Go to your local game store. That if they have a library that you can try out games, you know, get some plays in of these games before you buy them. You know, like Cody said, make purchasing a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you've bought something, you know, then really come up with a plan to get it to the table more. I'm not saying write anything down or something like that, but, you know, I think that a good game should be hitting your table multiple times, even like 6 months later or a year later after you buy it. You know, it should be coming to the table. And if it's not, you know, why are you keeping it? You know, because and this is just me, and I'm not the average BGG-er, I don't think. I'm finding that I don't want to be a collector. I really don't want to be a game collector. I want to be a gamer. I want to be a game player.
Preach it.
And I want to have a good assortment of games, you know, so that if, you know, I want to be that guy that if, you know, if they're having a party, oh, you know, I want them to say, well, you know, be sure to invite John because he'll bring a big pile of games, you know. That's fine. I don't mind having but I want to have a wide assortment. I don't want to have a bookshelf full of games that never get played. It's just ridiculous. There's just no reason for it except to just be able to stand and look in your game room and just look at all the stuff. I mean, that's just hoarding and being stupid.
I think the wall of games.
Yeah, and, you know. I just don't see any benefit to that at all. I just don't think that, you know, that you're gaining a whole lot from that.
I agree.
So
that was very well said.
Yeah, well, very well said. And I'm really talking to myself more than I'm talking to anybody else here because
you got a lot of games,
and it's something that I really need to kind of call out just because I need to get those games to the table. We talked about Stone Age. That's still one of my favorite games. Hasn't gotten to the table. I got to get that thing to the table. You know?
Yes, sir.
It's almost Richard postulated out. You know, if I was really utilizing that, and if I haven't played something in a year, get rid of it. Then you know I should be doing that. So look at your collection, listeners.
Yep.
You know, whether it be big or small, and those games that you have that you know you keep saying, well, I wish I could get that at the table. Try hard to get those things to the table. You know, we really enjoyed getting Rune Wars back to the table, and we're going to get it to the table again in the next couple of weeks. And you know, enjoy those games that you have. Don't just make it a one play thing.
Yeah, you might surprise yourself because I know with Rune Wars and a few other games where I've kind of forced myself to bring it to the table, mm-hmm. I found that my expectations are just blown away because there's just little things of those games, those really special games that you think you know inside and out, and you're playing it, and you just something comes up, and you're like, oh yeah, you know, it's just that feeling you have when you play it, or a certain mechanic, or something comes up. You know, don't be afraid to, even if you've played X game, you think you know Catan outside, inside and out, you bring it to the table every so often. If you want to keep it in your collection, you know, I would say just be, like John said, if you want to be a collector, be a collector. But if you really want to be a gamer...
Don't be a collector.
I'm
just saying don't be a collector.
if you want to be a gamer, then keep an eye on that collection and really safeguard it where you're being cautious of what you're bringing in and liberal of what you're taking out, and you know, keeping the good stuff in there and having the good stuff at your table.
See, because I find that in my own life, I have difficulty with that in other areas too. You know, of even like clothes and stuff that I'll find that, you know, I have like five outfits that I'm wearing all the time. You know, mm-hmm. and then but I have all these other clothes. You know, and they usually end up like in a big laundry pile or something. You know, it's just. You know, I need to purge clothes out. You know, I think that, especially in America, that I think we just have this constant influx of stuff into our house and into our lives. And I think that we have to fight that. You know, I mean, I'm getting all philosophical now, I guess. But I think it's important that we need to, you know, keep our lives kind of organized, you know, and not let our stuff consume us. You know, don't let our possessions overtake us. And that includes our games, too, you know. Again, I'm talking to myself here.
Well said.
All right. Well, that's enough of that soapbox. But anyway, so, you know, get those games to the table.
Stay vigilant, gamers.
Do it. All right. Well, it's time for some listener mail in the Game On inbox. Our first one is from Kenny Owens.
Hi, Kenny.
He says, hi, Cody and John. I really enjoy the podcast, and as I am newer to the show, it gives me something to listen to on the ride home. Our game group plays a wide variety of games from Agricola and Kalos to Bonanza and Killer Bunnies.
Mm.
That is a wide variety.
That is a wide variety.
We really enjoy Ticket to Ride, and I have often considered picking up the next level of train games, but there are so many of them it's impossible to decide which would be a good step up in this genre. He says, keep up the good work, and there is nothing wrong with Small World as number four.
I got a lot of flack for that. And I got a lot of flack for Talisman at number three.
Yeah, yeah.
Which...
You shouldn't have gotten flack for that. I'm okay with Talisman.
Okay, then I'm okay with Small World at four.
All right. Truce?
Truce.
Okay. So he says he enjoys Ticket to Ride and is looking for the next step up in the train game category.
Oh, boy.
I guess it sort of depends on what direction you want to go as far as train game goes. Mm-hmm. If you want to go like more the... you know, picking up goods and delivering route. I mean, you could probably go with like Steam. Mm. That's a pretty big step up from Ticket to Ride.
Empire Builder.
Empire Builder is a Crayon Rails.
I love those games.
Okay, so those I hear those can be a little bit long. I've never actually played one.
I don't think so. I mean, it's a little longer than Ticket to Ride.
Mm-hmm.
I liked them every time I played them. I mean, I got literally forced to play it. James Gasway, if you remember from a lot of episodes back, my old DM.
Yeah.
You know, he brought out this game. I was a pretty new gamer, and he was like, you should try it. And it looked completely unappealing to me because I'm like a 16-year-old. And it's like, you want to do trains with wax crayons? Like, I do not. But there's nothing else to do, so we did it.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun with it. That's good. I heard a lot of good things about Steam.
Yeah.
My in-laws actually picked it up. They demoed it. I didn't play it.
I almost got it at Gen Con this year with my Mayfair Games discount, you know, with the mm-hmm. Catan thing.
Right.
But it was one of those deals where it's like it's a three play. You got to have at least three players, and just didn't think I was going to get at the table very much. But.
You know, we might throw this one back to the listeners because I bet there's a few puffing billies out there.
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, if you have any ideas for train games. The next step in train games after Ticket to Ride.
So we're outsourcing.
I know. What do they call that? Crowdsourcing? Yeah. Something like that? Yeah.
Now I will say, just in the Ticket to Ride universe itself, assuming you've just played Ticket to Ride USA, Europe and Maryland add dimensions of their own to the game. Not to mention, you know, we have Switzerland, which is really good for 2 to 3 players, and I've heard Nordic countries is along the same lines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid to maybe experiment with those, but it's still going to be Ticket to Ride at the end of the day.
Yeah. Because, I mean, a lot of the when you talk about the next step in train games, you're going from just route building to now, you know, goods delivery and an economic factor to the game. So if that's what you're looking for, then go like a Steam or a Railways of the World would be a good one. But if you're just looking for more of that style of route building games, then yeah, I would go with just another one of the other versions of Ticket to Ride that adds a little bit more complexity. Okay, so here's another one from Brian Simington. Okay,
I know Brian.
You know Brian. Okay, yes. Well then this will be interesting to you. Then
he was our dungeon master for the last room of True Dungeon.
Oh, was he really? Okay. He was. All right. This makes sense then. Okay. So this email says, "Hey, Cody and John, longtime listener, first time emailer. Really enjoy the podcast. Just finished listening to episode 51, hearing your top 11 list. While I agree with some rankings, go small world, and disagree with others, not a fan of Battlestar Galactica, I really enjoy listening to your reviews and comments to get ideas about games I might like to try."
Like Battlestar Galactica?
Anyway, maybe not that one. Or small world. Anyway, I'm writing to make a comment on your episode 50 podcast. You guys were talking about True Dungeon at Gen Con a couple of times during the show. You were implying pretty strongly that there may have been some shenanigans during the run for members of the guild, particularly Will Wheaton's slide that killed Smoke the Red Dragon.
I think I outright accused shenanigans.
Yeah.
Okay.
He says, "Well, I think I even heard you smirking."
Oh, yeah.
You definitely did. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was there when it happened. I was one of Smoke's minions, the DM for the room, and I was there to help during the combat. It was a great deal of fun. Smoke was talking smack to Will, and Will was really motivated to take him down. Jeff C. was running with the group as their bard, and he was really singing his heart out to motivate everyone. Do we know who Jeff C. is?
Jeff Chandler. He's one of the directors for True Dungeon.
Oh, okay. I assume True Dungeon provided the guild members with tokens, including the +2 Iron Spear of Dragon Slaying for Will. Okay, so they did equip him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was... pretty well. That's not my problem.
Okay, anyway. On what I think was his third slide, after almost getting a critical in his second, Will slid his token down the board and it was clearly on the 20. Jeff C. immediately told everyone to stop sliding to make sure no one hit it. Stu, the head DM, and I both checked the token and the asterisk was definitely closest to the damage indicator triggering the dragon slaying magic. It was a great, really great slide and an absolutely authentic victory. We gave Will the D20 we were using for combat since he had posted on his blog that he was collecting dice from Gen Con. I saw Will the next day to get his autograph and I told him I was there in the room. After thanking me for volunteering, he said he imagined that he had thrust the spear through Smoke's heart and that the red D20 was his trophy. What a nerd. Wow. No, those are my words, not Brian's. Yeah. Anyway, looking forward to the next podcast. See you on the forums, Cody. Game on, Brian.
All right.
Your thoughts?
I have to say, if both Brian and he mentioned the other DM in the room, a guy named Stu.
Stu.
He's a local guy, actually.
Okay.
If they're vouching for it, then I'm for believing him. Cause
okay.
I know these guys through TD. They're stand-up guys. So maybe some of my Will Wheaton fatigue was bleeding over. Because I think he's a nice guy, and I like what he does. But like I said, I just got kind of worn out with people saying, and this isn't a small world jab on you, no, but you know, saying small world was the best game in the last 10 years because Will Wheaton said it was.
You seem to be in general against fanboyism.
I kind of am.
Yeah, I get the impression that you just don't like anybody being put up on any sort of pedestal.
I'm just kind of cranky, and it's probably something I shouldn't be so cranky about. But it's not like Will Wheaton does anything that annoys me. he seems like a genuinely nice guy. You know? I'd have a beer with him, but I don't know. I think maybe just my frustration with that. Like, why? I don't know why he's so popular all of a sudden. You know, I'm just kind of confused. Yeah. But back to the point at hand. If Brian and Stu say that it's legit, then I will retract my snarkiness and go with that.
Okay.
So, congrats, Will and the Guild.
All right. Thanks for the email, Brian.
All right, our next email is from Mike Shelley, and he writes, "Hey guys, just wanted to drop a note of thanks for your podcast. I'm getting ready to move from the UK back to America, USA, after having lived here for 4 years. I've been packing up my board games for the move and listening to your backlog. You have a really fun show."
Thanks.
"Your love of games comes through, and there's a balance of banter between the two of you and talking about games. I feel a bit like you are old friends." I hate John.
Is that an age joke?
"Now and would fit right into our game group here. I like the new unstructured direction the show is taking. The best part of the show has always been you guys talking about games, and this gives you more freedom to do that. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Mike."
All right. Well, welcome back to the US of A.
Yeah, I need to get into the European game group because, you know, when Kayla and I take that Scotland trip that I'm always talking about, I want to play some games over there, but not with the really Scottish people. Because then I wouldn't be able... That's my fear. I've never been overseas. I've never even been to Canada, right? My worry is, I'm...
Canada's also not overseas.
I know. But shut up. And, I'm big into Scottish heritage and learning about kind of like my family history. I'm worried that I'll finally go to Scotland one day and it'll be really cool, but I'll end up in one of the really Scottish areas.
The really Scottish
and
areas,
and won't understand or know what the heck's going on.
All right.
You know? I don't know how that devolved into that, but
no, I understand. Well, I had a friend at church who said that he took his wife to Ireland, and he said that because Ireland different from Scotland, but he said that going there was really cool because it was like stepping into a different world because it's, you know, European and, you know, very different from the United States, but everybody spoke English. So yeah. It was like really, really cool to be able to walk around in this very different environment and yet you were still able to communicate with everybody. So,
maybe I'll go to Nova Scotia first.
Cross the sea to Nova Scotia.
Training Scotland.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, we got another email here from Paul Douglas Rivers. He says...
the three namers.
I know.
I think Jeffrey Norman Burbeau and
stuff. That's right.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah. He says, "Hey, guys, just caught your podcast for the first time. I'm pretty new to the hobby, the gaming hobby, so I'm slowly learning more of the hobby gaming podcasts. I found your show to be very entertaining, and I'm always a sucker for anything that goes to 11.
There you go.
Thank you.
It's one more than 10.
Yeah, it's higher than 10. Anyway. Also, it's very refreshing that you aren't school teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
Says, well, one of you mentioned being a graphic designer, so I could be wrong, but no, you're not a school teacher, are you?
No, I'm not. Okay. I would be a terrible school teacher. I, when I first entered college, I was going to be a music teacher.
Oh, really?
But I was good at the music, not good at the teaching.
I could see you being like an angry band director.
Play it right!
Banging a drumstick on a music stand. Anyway. He said, "But the other board game podcasters all seem to be very eager to mention that they're school teachers every opportunity that they get." We're not. We're dumb as a box of rocks. No. He said, "I caught the we're sure bashing Munchkin a lot episode." That's most episodes, actually. which I found to be funny because that was my gateway game, so to speak. I can't really defend it because it's gotten pretty stale pretty fast, but... even after I bought the expansions. So I do have an actual question, though. I work a night schedule, and as much as I love this new hobby I found in gaming, it's just tough to find time to do it. Weekends are typically reserved for the girlfriend that I don't see because of the night shift, so the opportunity to even get myself to the table is infrequent and unpredictable. You mentioned during the show playing certain games by email. This doesn't sound very appealing to me, but it may be the only option I have between now and the Thanksgiving holiday. So I have a laundry list of questions regarding that. Like, how does it work? How can I find other email gamers? Is it still fun? And other such questions. Thanks. Great show, Paul."
Well, that's a tough situation, being on the night shift.
That's tricky, yeah.
Yeah. You might try, I might have some purists scoff, but you might try stuff like Brett Spielvelt, your online gaming.
Or yukata.de, that's another one. Yep. Game Table Online. There's a lot of places that are like online sites where you can play either with other people or even sometimes against computer AI.
Right. Play by email. I think your best bet is to just go to those game pages on the Geek, on BoardGameGeek.com. I know there's a waiting list for Battlestar Galactica play by post. I mean, I put one in a few months ago and my game just started not too long ago.
How's that going?
I just revealed myself as a Cylon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This group is good. I mean, I almost got to where I could do the full reveal and do a lot of damage, but they brigged me right before I was going to reveal.
Nice.
Yeah, but I mean, these guys were uber paranoid, and they saw through my lies. But no, I'm fully revealed as a Cylon. It's a game 104 on Board Game Geek. If you're interested in following along.
Oh, okay. I'm just like a thread?
It's just a thread. You can find it. Okay. So go find it. I'm a Gaius Baltar, naturally.
Nice.
Yep. So yeah, it's tough not being in that position. You may even try solo games. I know we touched on it earlier. And I know it's not the same as playing with other people, but you know, it might be a short-term fix if this night shift thing is just for the short term and not the long term. You know, that might help you get your fix, especially since you're new to the hobby. So look for those games that have good solo versions. You know, we mentioned Castle Ravenloft. There's a host of other ones.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that a lot of those online... like online services, you know, might be your best bet as far as those go. Now, as far as like playing by post and playing by email, if you're able to find a game of diplomacy to play by email, I would highly recommend that because I'm having just a really, really great time with that. And if you know the rules of the game of diplomacy, it's basically all of the talking that you would do with diplomacy is just done via email. And my game's been going very, very well, which is I'm actually in a really tough spot where I kind of had an alliance with a guy, and then he broke that alliance, and then we got back together, and then I broke the alliance again. And so, you know, he basically sent me an email saying, "Well, I'm not sure what happened that last turn, but now I'm declaring open war against you." Then like 2 minutes later, he sends an email to everybody else in the group saying, "I'm pretty much declaring open war on John." And to which I replied, "Bring it on, biatch," I believe. But the fun part about that is that then the guy who's playing one of the other countries, he writes an email saying, "Don't trust them," because he thinks that we're just staging it and that we actually are still an alliance, but
it's
that
a
we're
good
staging
game.
It. So,
or it's a good exercise. I know some people say it's not even a game. It's more of a social exercise.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah. And we have our Day of Diplomacy coming up in just a few days.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about it in the next episode for sure, but... I'm excited. This is my first game as a player. I moderated The Last Affair.
It's going to be great. Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, we got one more question, one more email in the inbox here. And this is from Jeff Hastings. He says, "Hey guys, quick question for you.
Okay.
I've also been interested in Alien Frontiers." Well, boy, who hasn't? I mean, you know, it's big, big, big hotness here. "But I've heard you, as well as many others, compare it to Kingsburg in some ways. I know this is intended to be a favorable because most people really seem to like Kingsburg. I actually sold my copy because I and everyone I played with felt so disappointed and let down in the monsters of that game. I really felt like the board and components were awesome and you geared up and got ready, and then the monsters were just a big nothing that almost never offered a challenge at all. I realize it's a gateway game, but still. Please tell me Alien Frontiers doesn't suffer from a similar gameplay mechanic where the focal point is gateway-like enough to be rather elementary. Thanks much, Jeff."
Nope.
Yeah, it's really not like that at all.
This game will Jones theory out Kingsburg.
Yeah.
My wife probably won't let me get rid of Kingsburg, but if we were applying full Jones theory rites and rituals, this game trumps it in about every way imaginable.
Yeah, I think one of the key points is that in Alien Frontiers, you're not playing, at no point are you playing against some sort of game element. You are playing against the other players.
Yep.
You know, and the fact that the planet that you're landing on basically becomes like a little mini area control game. Really, it's a very different focus. So I think that if you have issues with that part of Kingsburg, the monsters, and you know, building up your army for that, that's not the way Alien Frontiers works at all. So.
Pre-order it now, thank us later.
That's right. Yeah, clevermojogames.com. Okay.
And I actually got. Here's the last free plug for Myriad Games.
Okay.
I actually got Dan to pick up a few copies for his store inventory.
Oh, great.
So if you really want to, you can go through MyriadGames.com and pre-order through them.
Outstanding.
I told him I'm going to sell him out of those games.
Yeah, yeah. As well you should.
There you go.
All right. Well, I think that, boy, a lot of stuff in the inbox. We really appreciate it when you guys write in. So please keep the emails coming. And, you know, you can always voicemail. I was going to say voicemail us. You can always send us a voicemail at 4138-GAME-ON. And if you want to reach us via email, Cody, where should they write?
They should write the Game On Inbox. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps up our show. You ready to close it out?
Let's do it.
All right.
All right. Well... it's another fantastic episode.
That's right. That was episode 52 we just finished.
Yeah.
That's like a deck of cards.
It sure is, buddy.
I'm just saying.
Just like a deck of cards.
It's late.
It is. Yeah, it's all of 9:15.
It's late for me. Yeah.
You're an old man now.
I get up very early to go to work.
Our next episode should be a big one. In fact, so big we might have to delay it a week.
Yep, and that's mainly because we're going to be 2 weeks from now in the lovely state of New Hampshire doing all that gaming at Myriad Games. And so we're going to need a few extra days to get an episode recorded and edited and out to you guys. So look for that episode probably in probably 3 weeks from now.
But a lot of good stuff we're going to be talking about. The Myriad Games celebration that we're going to be at, the Extra Life charity event, and the Day of Diplomacy, our second one, which is a couple days from now.
Yep.
So a lot of other good stuff in there, too.
I would bet I'll probably be playing some new games at Myriad, so we might even have a review for you.
All righty.
Excitement. All right, well, that just about wraps it up for us. So until next time.
Game on.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 413-8-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gameonpodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on pulpgamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, game on.